Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Just like Mom.
Here's John Williams.
We're asking you to tweet at me on Twitter. I'm WGN King John. I'm that on Facebook and Instagram, too. WGN King John. And you can always participate with us that way. WGN King John on social media. Otherwise, I'm just John. We're here until 3. Weekdays 1 to 3, Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. We have a fun show on Saturday. We're not on the air tomorrow because of, as you've heard, White Sox baseball. It's the Cubs and the White Sox. Cubs are doing everything right the last few games. White Sox, not so much. So I'm rooting for the White Sox on this one.
It's always such a fun time. Love it.
Are you into the crosstown rivalry a lot, Kim?
I am. I love it.
Are you going to go to any of the games?
I'm actually going to be out of town, but for a good reason. So
you got a wedding or a
no,
fun
my
thing
son's
to do?
Graduating from law
oh,
school.
Oh, hooray, hooray.
Yeah.
Hooray. My friend Eric Zorn, I was just talking to him, and he said, I won't be here next week. And I said, why? And he said, I'm going to be at my son's graduation. He's graduating with a doctorate in mathematics from UCal Berkeley.
Wow, that's way over my head.
Which makes him the smartest person
absolutely
any of us knows. So congratulations to y'all.
Thank you.
In fact, let's talk briefly about graduation ceremonies while we're on this topic. It was kind of on my mind anyway. The last few days, we've been on and off with baseball here, but you may have seen last weekend at the University of Florida, they had the commencement ceremony. And here's how they do it there. It sounds like, it looked like all of the kids sort of come maybe from the side stage, but then through a little center entry point onto the main stage in the middle, and it's on a jumbotron, so they rather emerge or appear from behind, and then there they are. And the name is, you know, Kim Gordon, Elif Garris. And you see them on the screen, and they get their diploma, shake the hand, walk off. Kids at the University of Florida decided, a lot of them, I guess this was promoted by some of the black fraternities and sororities, but white kids were doing this as well. They would do a little dance. They would do a spin and a little herky-jerky move, you know, just a little celebratory end zone dance for a few seconds as they moved on. Now, we've all been to graduation ceremonies these days, and it's one of the rites of spring in America that there will always be conversation about how badly behaved we all are at graduation ceremonies. They'll say, ladies and gentlemen, under no circumstances at this most important point in your family's lives should you make any comments, cheers, or remarks. This is a graduation ceremony, and frankly, we're just trying to get through the damn thing. We got 1,100 kids here, and if we all pause while you cheer on Johnny, and then we wait for everybody to hear Jeannie's name, this thing is going to take 6 months. So please just shut up, and we'll let you cheer at the end. And everybody understands that. And then when their kid comes up, wah, they just go bananas. So that's what happens at graduation ceremonies. And we have not figured out what to do with that. But now we have a sort of reverse problem. It's not the crowd overreacting, but it's the kids on stage doing their dance.
Do your dance after.
So at the University of Florida, the faculty member who kind of has the role of bouncer, who's standing there as the kids emerge onto center stage, when they would start to do their dance, he would just grab them, and he would power walk them off the stage. And he didn't push them, and he didn't throw anybody, but he was that close to it. It was a very aggressive perp walk. He just sort of grabs him and says, all right, you're coming with me, missy. And off they go. You're coming with me, mister. And the kids didn't resist or fight back. You know, they sort of looked like they knew that maybe this wasn't going to be embraced. But they were going to go ahead and do it anyway. So they're still dancing as they get pushed off. And then here's the next kid. And damn, this kid's dancing. So here's the reaction from the crowd at the University of Florida. So they're like cheering. Check out the dance. Hey! Now, wait a minute. What's happening? Listen to the crowd. It's turning into jeering and booing. That's a lot of fun. How about an hour of that? So that's what it sounded like at the University of Florida.
I was nervous to even shake the hand. Like, I was like, oh, I'm going to mess up this handshake. Like, you know, I can't believe they're getting on stage and doing that.
I was like,
I'm going to trip. I'm not going to do my handshake hard enough when I get my diploma.
I was a little straight up when I was a kid, too, about things like this. I did not want to misbehave in public. My friend John Lang, who is now a TV photographer in Florida, graduated with me at Southern Illinois University of Carbondale. The Langs are from the North Shore around these parts. John and I were roommates and friends in college. We are to this day. At the graduation ceremony, on the top of his mortarboard, he put a picture of Len O'Connor, the longtime... What channel was he on, Steve? Was it Channel 7?
Channel 9. And I am Len O'Connor.
I am Len O'Connor. And he was sort of this, you know, dour-faced, serious man who didn't put up with any nonsense. And he would give editorials, and they would always go like this. Mayor Daley today said that something was good. I think it's bad. And he would always close with, and I am Len O'Connor. So that was the Len O'Connor thing. And he was a mainstay. He was a big deal. So John put his picture on the top of his hat, and I thought, oh, you're going to get in trouble. You can't have Len O'Connor on the top of your mortarboard. John did not get in trouble.
The thing is, it's everyone has to go through graduation together, so I wouldn't want to ruin someone else's. Like, it has to be sterile so that everyone...
Have you watched the video?
No.
Okay, it's on my Facebook page. I'm going to pause here. You watch the video and tell me if you think that the kids were overacting or the administration bouncer was overacting. Who was the heavy on this one? And you can look at it right now. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. I know some of you already have. My number's 312-981-7200. Call or text 312-981-7200 and tell me who you think was misbehaving next. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. 120. I'm asking you to tell me, what do you think of that video we posted on my Facebook page on WGN King John there? You've probably seen it elsewhere. University of Florida students dancing on stage. Violetta, did you get a chance to watch it yet?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, who's the heavy, the school or the kids?
I just wanted them to walk, but since they decided to dance, I don't know.
Let them dance. Let them dance. You gotta dance.
Who calls the shots these days, right? I mean,
I know.
If everyone's just going to do whatever they want all the time.
Well, I think we're all adults here. I think, for instance, you don't need a rule to prescribe all behavior. You can say, in this situation, I'm going to make an audible. I'm going to call it as I see it. And in that case, even if I had a rule saying, there'll be no shenanigans on stage, and I'm watching the kids do short... They weren't even pausing that much. They were still sort of moving in their dance.
But it was causing a ruckus in the crowd.
I think the big ruckus came when they started to throw these kids around.
Okay, throw is a big word. They were not
when they
throwing.
Grabbed these kids and then handcuffed them and okay, walked them to the right. County jail. So you think the kids were misbehaving. I think the school was. Steve, do you care to break the tie on this one at all?
I haven't seen it, John.
Okay. Well, when you get a chance, it's on my Facebook page. Or just Google kids getting banged up inappropriately by University of Florida.
Did anyone say, don't tase me, bro?
Wow. I hope that resonates with people still. Do people still know and love that line? Do we all remember that scene?
Because I think that happened in Florida too, didn't it?
I think that was in Florida. It was at a speech given by one of the Bush administration people.
I was thinking, Jeb, but I'm not real confident of that.
Oh, no, I'm thinking it was like a Cheney or a Rumsfeld or President Bush. Somebody stood up in the crowd and started to shout out, you know, their anger at whatever the speaker was saying. So they go to drag that poor guy off. Elif, you'll have to find the audio of this, too, now. And as they're... And I don't know why, but I guess he wasn't cooperating, so they were going to drag him out. And as they're dragging him out, he screams out, don't tase me, bro.
The University of Florida.
Was it U of F?
University of, this is Wikipedia, but real quick, University of Florida taser incident was an incident in which a University of Florida student was stunned with a taser at a forum featuring Senator John Kerry.
Ah, so it was, I guess that would be...
September 17th, 2007.
Okay, so it wasn't even any administration. It was just Senator John Kerry was speaking. Don't tase me. And they did, huh? And then he goes, wow! Yow, that hurt. Yikes. Woohoo.
He might have been, so September of 2007, he might have been running by then or just beginning to run.
Don't tase me, bro. 122, phone calls and texts. We're asking you, John, what about the high school in South Carolina fining cheerers? I didn't see that, really.
Just get your diploma and go.
Go, dang
okay?
it. So they've got people going, you, third row, 18 seat, $50. Boom, that just happened. okay, let's pick up some phone lines here. Rob, you're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say? Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Talk to us, man. You're on.
Well, my son just graduated from the University of Michigan.
Oh, wow.
On Friday.
Congratulations.
From their law school.
Yeah.
And even the dean announced before the ceremony started, as the kids were filing in, if you want to cheer and holler and yell, please go ahead and do that, because it's a great accomplishment. Well, when the kids started filing in, and the parents and the family started hollering and yelling like they were at a football game, and I was about ready to walk out. So my wife had her nails dug into my knee to
because,
keep me from moving.
Wait a minute, even though the dean encouraged it and people did it, you still didn't like it. Is that what you're telling me?
I didn't think, I thought it was not appropriate for, maybe it's appropriate for undergrad, but I didn't think it was appropriate for somebody getting their doctorate of jurisprudence.
Right.
To have all this carrying on.
Jurisprudence. I guess in that, for instance, I've seen this sort of celebration at grade school graduations.
Yeah.
Eighth grade and high school. And maybe it is, in some people's sense, because we're not going to have a lot of these. But you've been to this dance before, so maybe the lawyers acting that way is not necessarily appropriate. I don't know.
It really was more the families than the kids themselves. The kids themselves were pretty good.
Maybe the families were cheering because they are now out of college jail. I mean, how much does it cost to get a kid through the University of Michigan Law School? I'd probably
about $300,000.
Yeah, and then they've got a. So, how much of that $300,000 has already been paid?
Almost all of it.
Oh wow. Congrats to you guys.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Thanks for the phone call, Rob.
Okay. Thanks.
Appreciate you joining us. Now you know why lawyers cost $275 an hour. They walk away with either $300,000 in debt or without $300,000 in their pocket that they've already paid. 300 grand. That's 4 years plus 4 years. 8 years of college. I'm just doing this real quick here. Eight goes into 300,000.
A lot of times.
$40,000 a year times 8 years. Wow. Let's talk to Karen. Hey, Karen, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. I just want to say I don't have Facebook, so I can't see the video. But I feel that if all that money they spent to go to college and all the time they did their studies, they should be able to do whatever they want across that stage except run naked. But a little dance, that's not going to hurt anybody.
Karen, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to go from you to Tom. Tom, you're on WGN. Hi, Tom. What do you want to say?
Hey, yeah, I was actually at that specific graduation.
The one in Florida?
My nephew graduated.
From Florida?
Yeah, my nephew graduated. Yeah, in Florida. There were 5 graduations that weekend. 3 on Saturday and 2 on Sunday, if I remember correctly.
Oh, it's such a big school,
yeah. That was the middle one of the day. They were graduating 10,000 people over that weekend.
Wow.
My nephew was one of them, so I went out there to watch it and to support him. And first of all, there were more than one person that played the bouncers. That's what I called it when he started doing it.
Yeah.
Because the first person that acted up was a white kid that did a backflip. And he almost tackled him and knocked him over. Yeah, he did a backflip. He almost tackled him and knocked him over.
This changes everything.
And he pulled him up. They didn't pull him completely off the stage. They just pulled him to the president to shake hands. So it's not like they eliminated you from the rest of the procedure. The bottom line is the kids that just stopped for a moment, one was a little more aggressive, but they stopped for a second, he ran in and pulled them. And the idea was there were people doing the gator clap and their signs for their fraternities and sororities. But if they didn't stop walking, he didn't do anything. But as soon as they stopped walking, he jumped in.
Right. So if the dance begins to get stationary, then you're going to start, we're going to move you along, huh?
Right. And one was more aggressive than the others.
One of the bouncers. Yeah. All right. So what did you make? At the end of the day, we heard cheers and boos for this. Where were you on it?
Well, I didn't, obviously I cheered for my nephew and I politely cheered for the other people. I didn't boo anything for
No, but
sure.
What do you make
that
of the behavior?
That was right at the end.
What did you make of
that
the treatment?
That was right at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? Okay. That's also nice to know. So it didn't mar the whole ceremony. This sort of action was at
no.
the end. But
right.
So did you think that the school was overreacting or acting appropriately when the kids were
for one thing, I'm very sensitive to race. I have friends that have suffered greatly from racism. And my first thoughts when I heard the report the next, my wife is like, was that the graduation you were at on Monday when it was on was it Good Morning America? I was like, yeah that's the exact graduation.
Yeah.
And I thought that it's really a bad thing to call racism right off the bat where they said they were singling out black kids. Because I seriously don't think I did. I just think that it was black kids that were more to stop.
They were better at it. Very good. All right, listen, I got to go, Tom. I'm so glad you were there, though. I'm glad you were able to call in and share that with us.
It was not a bad experience until Monday when I saw it on Good Morning America.
I'd like to have seen that kid do the backflip, because I think if they're going to start doing gymnastics, then it does sort of change my impression that it was these brief celebratory dances and it wasn't too intrusive. You cannot begin to do gymnastics. It's 1:29. This is, boy, we got a lot of texts and more calls about this. We're going to move on, though. Maybe we'll pick this up again on Saturday. This is WGN. We aren't on at this time tomorrow. Cubs and Sox baseball.
What?
And this time we're rooting for the Southsiders. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be fun. And hopefully it'll be a good game. The Cubs are doing a lot of things right now. The Sox are not. So let's make it a competitive game and maybe a win for the Chicago White Sox, heard here on WGN Radio. So I mentioned that I was at that Tesla dealership last night.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been in or around a Tesla?
Yeah, I've been, ours.
I did not know that the Bertrands owned a Tesla.
We do have friends who have a Tesla, so I have been.
And have you driven it?
I've not driven it, no.
Have you been in it while it's being driven by somebody else?
I think I've been in a Tesla.
My understanding is it's just like fantastically quick and quiet, and it's almost weird. So we're at the dealership last night in an event for the American Lung Association, which I'm about to talk about, but I just wanted to mention this. When you open up the trunk of the Tesla, the $35,000 one, the entry-level sedan they have,
mm-hmm.
It's gigantic. It's really, really big. It's like
that's how they market it, great trunk space.
But the weird thing is, because then when you look, and then the back seat's a nice kind of spacious back seat, and then the front seat is very weird because you've got two bucket seats there, and the dashboard has no instrumentation. You look at it and you kind of do a double take, like, wait, what's missing? This isn't right. And they have, the way you have in a lot of cars now, of course, a little computer screen that's sort of center post, but, center on the dashboard. But all of the instrumentation that you would normally see directly in front of you in the driver's seat is gone. It's just, mahogany or leather. It's just sort of contoured.
You know what else they have?
No.
They have cameras facing the passengers and driver above the rearview mirror.
Why do they do that?
Well, they're not turned on yet, but we talked about this on the business lunch last week. The thinking is that eventually they will have the technology to monitor the driver and to see if she or he is looking away or
really
and becoming distracted, and then warn them. Or,
oh, I see. Hey, look back over here.
Or assign fault when there's an accident,
right,
or things like that.
Kind of the black box thing, huh? And then you open up the hood. You go under the hood of the car, and there's nothing there. There's nothing there. They got a trunk in the front, too, because you don't have an engine in a Tesla. Why? What does that mean? It means that it's no emissions. What a good thing for the American Lung Association to partner with in our studio right now. And by the way, so the American Lung Association had an event last night which promoted a number of things, including a walk that I want to tell you about in a minute. But in our studio is Kristen Young, the executive director of the ALA in Greater Chicago. Kristen, welcome back. How have you been?
Great. Thanks for having me, and thanks for being there last night.
And did you buy a car while you were there?
It's on layaway.
Until we get there. But, you know, it was, and they were good hosts, and I just think the synergy between the two, mm-hmm. lots of reasons to buy those cars. I'm done selling cars now. Let's talk about you guys. But, you know, if that leads to cleaner air, I guess that's good for all of us.
Right. It's a great partnership. We're so happy to be affiliated with them, and I think we're all out for the same mission, which is cleaner air and healthier people.
I talked to people there that had survived lung cancer, COPD, other respiratory ailments. There was a doctor there, Kevin
Kovitz, Dr.
who was
Kovitz.
Fascinating and mm-hmm. ever so friendly. What mm-hmm. a nice guy he was. Mm-hmm. Mo Reynolds was her name.
Wellborn.
Yeah.
She's the queen bee of Buffalo Grove and one of our top teams for this walk coming up.
Yeah, no kidding. She's been there the last few years and she gets family and friends and they raise a lot of money. And there was a phrase that came up. I mentioned it, but maybe you've heard it too. I saw it again in the news today. Third-hand smoke. We know we shouldn't smoke. That's bad for mm-hmm. us. Second-hand smoke is pretty obvious. I guess third-hand smoke is residual smoke in areas that you might be, and that could negatively affect you as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that lung cancer is which cancer killer in America?
It's the number one cancer killer in America, of both men and women.
Think about that. Lung cancer is the number one cancer killer in America.
Mm-hmm. And part of what this lung force movement is, and this week is actually National Women's Lung Health Week, which is really an opportunity to start talking about that. I think there's been a stigma for a long time around lung cancer, and more people, not just women, more and more people are being diagnosed that have never smoked a day in their lives. So it's a bigger conversation.
But why do you focus it on Women's Lung Health Week? Why not have everybody's Lung Health Week?
There was a statistic that in the last 30 years, women and lung cancer has increased over 116%. It's actually decreased a little bit in men. And there's a lot of theories as to why, one of which that they maybe started smoking a little later, so it might tie into that. Also that women are kind of the CEO of healthcare decisions in their household. So if we start, you know, focusing on women, they're going to talk about it more and be able to identify it in other family members.
I hadn't thought about that. But I think if I think about that, who made sure the kids were vaccinated?
Right.
Who asked us to eat well?
Go to the dentist.
Who's nagging? Right. That's my wife and maybe a lot of people's moms and wives.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly. So turquoise is the color of lung force and National Women's Lung Health Week. So our hope is that this week people wear turquoise as much as they can and just as an opportunity to start talking about it and sharing information and to be surprised how many people say, you know, I know someone, my aunt, my sister had lung cancer, and it's just a platform to really start talking about it, increase education, increase awareness, and more than anything, increase funding for research.
Tell me if this is true. In working with you all the last couple of years, I've got this in my head, but I want to make sure I'm quoting it correctly, that lung cancer is tough to treat because we catch it so late. But if we were able to have better tools to diagnose it earlier, or if you and I were maybe more circumspect about getting our lung health checked,
right,
it might be diagnosed earlier, and then it wouldn't be so fatal.
True. A lot of diagnoses happen in stage 3 or stage 4.
Right.
And part of that is because the symptoms are sometimes kind of, you can equate them to bronchitis or a million other things, and they're not as apparent necessarily. The other thing is that now low-dose CT scans are available for those that are high risk to get lung cancer. So a lot of insurance companies are covering that now. And we have a campaign called Save by the Scan, savebythescan.org. 3 questions that you can go on and just see, you know, do I even qualify? Should I be talking to my doctor about this?
Mm-hmm. Where do I go to get those 3 questions?
Savedbythescan.org.
Savedbythescan.org. Because I think you're right. A lot of us will go, oh, gee, this thing's been bugging me lately.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in the back of your mind, you're thinking, oh, crap, I hope this isn't something bad. But I'm sure it'll go away. And you ignore it.
Right. And to your point, if you've never smoked before, lung cancer and smoking are still somewhat tied together, and so it's not something you even think to talk to your doctor about. But more and more people are being diagnosed for reasons that we're not quite even sure yet, which is why we need the dollars for the research funding and need people to feel comfortable talking to their doctors about it.
Do you think it's environmental? Is there something going on all around us that
could be? I mean, radon is a second leading cause of lung cancer in homes, so that's something that I don't know that people know much about either.
Oh, I think anybody that's ever bought a home knows you got to get a radon test,
right.
And they all feel like they're being ripped off for it because
yeah.
It's not a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Very
the number deal. Two?
Number 2 cause.
of lung cancer, which is the number one cancer killer in America.
Correct. Yes.
Not the, it's not the most recurrent cancer.
Not the most prevalent by any means, but I will say that this year alone, 9,000 people in Illinois will die of lung cancer. So when you kind of compare that to the others, not that any of them are great by any means, but that there is a real need for increased education around that.
We talked about COPD at the Tesla dealership last mm-hmm. night. What is COPD?
Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So this is something that can occur in people that either have smoked or have had lung issues throughout their life. That's just kind of a general wearing of your lung capacity. And we encourage people to get out there and exercise. Using your lungs is one of the best ways to treat that on top of medication and things like that. But it is a very prevalent disease amongst people that have smoked, and whether you have or you haven't, the quality of life can be really affected by that.
When I see people walking around with those little boxes with a tube that goes up to their nose,
right.
Are they is that for that?
Not necessarily COPD, but if they have issues breathing, that is kind of a portable oxygen tank. So that technology is getting better and better, where you don't see as many people kind of wheeling around the canister. But
I know. Well, I thought about a woman that I saw at the event last night, and she was using something that I'm describing, was she not?
Yes.
And I thought, how nice for her, because it first looked like a bag, looked like a handbag she was carrying.
Right.
And then there was just a little thin tube that wrapped around and was feeding her oxygen as she was standing there having a cocktail
mm-hmm.
or whatever she was having. Yeah. But I mean, she was utterly able to socialize with us without having to lug anything around or even being embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm. It's all about quality of life for a lot of these people. And we always say, if you can't breathe, nothing else matters. But if it makes it really hard to breathe because you have all these tubes and things tied to you, that's not a great quality of life either. So how do we kind of move the needle a little bit?
So one of the ways to do it, which is the age-old pitch, is, well, we got to raise money. How are we going to do that? Mm-hmm. There's a walk that's going to take place this summer, which I think we should all, having heard what you just said, be interested in. We should support. If you support Pink, or if you support Heart Awareness, or pick the cause, they're all good, but good grief. We all breathe, right? And this is just going to be a really fun walk. I'm going to be there. It'll still be fun. Let me tell you about that in a minute. In our studio is Kristen Young. She's the executive director of the American Lung Association in Greater Chicago. We're the media partners for some of the events they do, including, I guess, right, the walk that's coming up in August?
Yes. So Sunday, August 12th, we are moving from Oak Brook to Soldier Field and walking south along the lakefront path. So
the Oak Brook campus is terrific, of McDonald's.
Beautiful.
Where we were. That's a lovely... Was it the McDonald's campus
mm-hmm.
we were?
Right.
Which is just a lovely place. We've done that a number of events there over the years, but this is going to be over by the museum campus.
Yes, starting in the Great Lawn of Soldier Field and then walking about a mile and a half down to 31st Street and back. So about a 3-mile walk for folks, and then we also have a 1-mile option for those patients and people that just don't want to make it that far.
31st Street. We're going north along the lake, aren't we? Or are we going south?
We're going south.
Yeah, south, 31st. Really? Mm-hmm. We go all the way down to 31st mm-hmm. and then turn around and come back up?
Yes.
And what's the round trip on that?
3 miles.
Boy, it seems like longer than that.
I know.
Sure, it's not, I think that's 12 miles. Are you sure? I think it's like 45 miles.
What?
You're
going to
walk us.
Don't scare people. It's really a marathon.
So, yeah. Psych. So 3-mile round trip.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be a lovely time right on the lake there. It's at what time in the morning?
So we'll check in at 8:30. We'll kick off about 10 o'clock. It's free to register. Certainly fundraising is encouraged. Lungforcewalkchicago.org is the best way to get more information about it. But we're moving downtown. We're really excited about it, to have Soldier Field as a partner and then, make a day out of it. You can park at Soldier Field, visit some museums, a lot of great restaurants right around there. So we hope people come take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Make it a day. And if you are listening, you're obviously listening to this now, but I would say, fun thing for you to do, but then really make it purposeful and get your family or kids, raise some money. Lungforcechicagowalk.org.
Lungforcewalkchicago.
Got those inverted. Dot org.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I'll post it on my Facebook page too, but it's lungforcewalkchicago.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can sign up for it again on August 12th down by the lake. Oh, and hey, Saturday is the day before Mother's Day. This is a great little idea for you guys. What are you doing?
So we have partnered with Kendra Scott, the jewelry store, the location on Southport, 3426 North Southport Avenue, from 11 to 1 p.m. 2 hours. You come shop, get your Mother's Day gift. 20% of the proceeds goes back to the American Lung Association and Lung Force. So 11 to 1 o'clock this Saturday, and the Southport location only. So come on out, make a fun afternoon out of it.
Southport, which is dang, that's near where I live, so I guess I can't escape this.
Well,
20%.
20%. You don't need a ticket. You don't need to say anything. Just all anybody that walks in the door and buys something during 11 to 1, 20% goes back. So let's make it a big day.
Thank you, Kendra Scott. And thank you, Kristen Young. She's the executive director of the American Lung Association in Greater Chicago. Nice job last night. And we'll see you, if not sooner, certainly in August for the event.
Great. Thank you.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
Kind of comes natural to us here. It's 208. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, weekdays 1 till 3. Then on Saturdays, we do a fun little show from 10 a.m. until noon. I hope you listen to that, too, on social media. It's WGN King John. On the 1 and the 2. And here we go for the second hour. By the way, I'm going to insert this into the second half hour of this hour. That would be sometime after 2:30. So I'm just reading at E! Online, Georgina Chapman has finally spoken out. Who's Georgina Chapman? Anyone? Anyone? You know who she is. Who's Georgina Chapman?
Georgina Chapman
is the ex-wife of Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, right.
And if you think about it, that whole story blew up like 7 months ago now. And we all know how that played out. We haven't heard from her since. Did you see in the story in People magazine how much money she's getting? Elif, Elif, look up and tell us how much is Harvey Weinstein worth, or was Harvey Weinstein worth? I'll bet it's a lot less now. But I'm looking for a big fat number about Harvey Weinstein. How much money did she get in the divorce settlement? What would you guess, Steve? If you were her or her attorney, you were advising her, how much does Georgina get in the divorce settlement? Pick a number, any number.
$200 million. $100
million? $15
million. Well,
that doesn't sound like a lot to me. It's enough to get along.
And yeah, I think you could do okay.
She's a successful person in her own right. I mean, she's got a career too, and she's got a couple kids. But still, 15 to 20 million. She'd been married for 10 years to that guy. 15 to 20 million? How did I miss that? I would have held out for more. But she just wanted to get away. Her statements about it are really interesting. I'll get to that. And Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton are in the same news stories that neither of them want to be in the next half hour as well. Oh, and also Paul Stoddard. I know what you're thinking, John. This is all good stuff, but I'd rather you talk to a geologist. So there's this guy. He's my favorite geologist at Northern Illinois University who's going to talk to us about volcanoes and what's going on in Hawaii.
I love that I could use magma in a news story today and ooze.
And that's not even the Harvey Weinstein story.
No, it's not.
So that's pretty crazy what's going on over there. Literally, this is like my luck. For the first time in ever, Brendan and I have decided, some friends of ours have a condo that they get every year in Hawaii. And they've, for the last few years, been saying, you guys, one of these Januaries, you should just come out. Brenda's birthday's in January, so we've decided to coincide Brenda's birthday with the trip to Hawaii next January. And we've been thinking about it, talking about how we're going to do it. I'm like, the only thing that's going to keep me from enjoying that is, like, I don't know, if a volcano just blows the island up. Now, if a volcano's blowing the island up, it's the worst luck for us. So hopefully it'll settle down. So far, nobody's been killed, hurt, or injured. It's all been good. Some property is lost. One guy lost his R2-D2 mailbox. A Ford Mustang was eaten up by the slow-moving wall of magma. It's pretty amazing what's happening. We'll talk about the next phase of this, which is kind of fascinating. After
it could blow, right?
It could. So there's, as I understand it, and again, I'm not a geologist, but I used to collect rocks in eighth grade.
And you've been to Hawaii?
There, I think I'm qualified. So some of the boulders and stuff, the dust, the rocks, the debris is falling back into that orange soup of magma that's down there, and it's filling up, and it's going to go down into the hole and clog it up. And what happens when it clogs it up? Kapow.
Well, they should put a net over it then.
You know what, Violetta, when the geologist comes on, I'm going to turn your microphone back on.
You take those kids who were dancing at the University of Florida and you go make them put a net over that volcano.
We thought about your punishment. You'll think next time.
We'll teach you.
Do a flip now, mister.
It's 2:12. President Trump tweeted this: the fake news is working overtime. just reported that despite the tremendous successes we are having with the economy and all things else, 91% of network news about me is negative, parentheses, fake. Why do we work so hard in working with the media when it is corrupt? Take away credentials? Tweeted the President of the United States. Now, we just recorded something called The Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast that we do here at WGN Radio on Thursdays, and it usually goes up around 5 o'clock after I have time after the show to clean up all the stupid things I would have otherwise left in that I said.
This week that I said.
Steve grabbed me and said, hey, there's a word I want to excise from that thing. And while we generally don't do that sort of thing, I tighten it up a little bit anyway. Certainly on Saturdays when we broadcast part of it. But I want to play part of it for you today. And this is the part where we were talking about this tweet of the president's. The full podcast, again, will go up around 4:30 this afternoon. And I'd like you to make a habit of listening to the Mincing Rascals podcast, right? And in this case, it's Eric Zorn. And I was just asking the gang if they didn't find it somewhat remarkable that while we all think we know what the president means when he says fake news, this is, by my recollection, the first time he's put a real definition on it. That is, you and I have long thought that the president just means fake news is any news that's negative about him. But you would imagine that he's trying to sell the idea that fake news is that. It's fake. It's not true. But in this tweet, he said 91% of the network news about me is negative, parentheses, fake. Oh, what do you know, Mr. President? So we read that tweet to the gang, and that little part of it is not what caught Eric Zorn's eye the most.
I fixated in that tweet on the idea of credentialing media, and one thing that I have stopped doing is getting Chicago Police Department media credentials. That early in my career, it's a thing that reporters in Chicago do, and you're supposed to apply, and they give you credentials as Chicago Police Department media. And at one point, I just said, "This is crap. Why are we being licensed by a government entity? We are independent media. If we want to credential ourselves and create our own Tribune ID, that's got to be good enough." And
it's not, though. You can't even get into the state. You can't even get into the Capitol, like House Gallery or some of the press areas, unless you have you've gone through a background check. You've gone to the Secretary of State's office. You know, the Tribune ID badge.
For safety purposes, but what about for editorial purposes?
Well, that's what the president was talking about. Yeah.
Oh, right. But I think if you want to show up on a crime scene, or you want to get into the courthouse, or you want to do something that the police department has jurisdiction over, then they want to clear you. There are so many other outlets now too that there are people who kind of show up with fake credentials. So I guess I'm disagreeing with you. I don't blame them for wanting.
That spawned all of this. The fake news is working overtime. Just reported that despite the tremendous successes we are having with the economy and all things else, 91% of the network news about me is negative fake. Why do we work so hard working with the media when it is corrupt? Take away credentials?
I'm sorry. I don't have a problem with that tweet. There has been hysteria about him restricting access to the media since he was inaugurated, since the very first press conference. And as far as I know, you have reporters still saying that in some cases they have more access than they used to have. And I don't think CNN has a constitutional right to fifth row, sixth seat in the press room. And I feel like that's what they're constantly whining about.
Well, wait, so he's brought this up, though, because the president referred to fake news and then in parentheses said, or negative news, and then in parentheses said fake. So what he was kind of doing was copying to the fact that when he dismisses something as fake news, it's really just negative news.
It may be true, but what he's also saying is that it may be true.
Yeah, but he calls it fake, even though
the definition isn't false, it's negative.
I think we're splicing and dicing here when it's unnecessary. Yeah.
Okay, so
I think this all came from, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the CNN reporter, you know, taking issue with Melania Trump, and she rolls out this program to help with opioids and children. And this reporter, who's supposed to be objective, basically takes a huge pot shot at Melania and says that she's not culturally American. She's still trying to figure things out. Basically kind of mocking her accent, even though Melania Trump speaks, what, like five or six languages?
I love that.
So Trump kind of goes on a rant to defend his wife is where I think this began, and I don't blame him. I wouldn't blame him for defending his wife.
But again, what John is saying is that he seemed to betray that when he says fake news, what he's referring to is not news that's fake, but news that's negative. He admitted that it's not really untrue; it's just negative.
I don't like
that. I think being negative is a shadow of being untruthful. If the media is unable to, in this moment, talk nicely or praise him like they would previous presidents for the lowest black unemployment rate in 15 years, for the freeing of the hostages, for undoing what I think was probably a bad deal with Iran. I mean, why do you think the Iranians the other day were burning an American flag? Because we lifted sanctions on them and their economy was flowing again and they weren't living up to the standards of the agreement. Whatever. None of that. He sees all of that as, if you're not going to report on the positive sides of what I'm doing, then you are not being truthful.
I'm pretty sure that most of the networks probably carried him standing on the plane with the hostages being released this morning.
All
that. And I agree with you. I mean, that this could be world-changing. The summit that he announced June 12th in Singapore, it could be an amazing thing. He deserves credit for
taking the meeting. Do you think he gets it appropriately? And if he doesn't, then is the media being truthful?
But what does that mean? The stories are being covered. It makes me crazy when I hear, well, yeah, they don't cover this. Well, then how in the hell do you know what happened?
How did it even come up? Because it got covered.
And but it gets covered in a different way. I mean, Obama freed hostages but had to give up five terrorists in exchange. Yes, it's getting coverage. And then they have a panel that's going to sit down and everyone's going to criticize some aspect of the freeing of the hostages.
Well, I'll say it. I mean, the freeing of the hostages is sort of a cosmetic step up to the summit. I mean, this is the sort of thing that happens. I don't think this is the result of hard-fought negotiations for the hostage release.
I think we're just going to show this as goodwill, and
we're going to release some people.
You think it happened independently? I mean, it clearly...
It would have never happened independently.
First of all, they killed this kid, Otto Warmbier, right? I mean, he died when he just came back from the U.S. And they took these hostages for no good reason. It's an incredibly brutal regime. They got thousands of people locked up there for human rights violations. I mean, it's a terrible place. So he lets three Americans go who he shouldn't have been hanging on to in the first place. And Trump gets on the tarmac and talks about what a wonderful man, how well he treated these guys. Here's the thing, Kristen, this is great.
You can't give him credit even when it's due. You think release of hostages is just like an easy task?
Boom, boom, and a right, and a left. Marciano to the gut.
So that's Kristen McQuarrie, editorial writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. You probably recognize Eric Zorn's voice, too, the Tribune columnist, editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand, and me. We are the Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast we record every Thursday, and it usually goes like that. We talked about sanctuary counties in Illinois, a little bit about Rahm Emanuel today, and the fact that the Tribune is no longer going to accept comments in the comment section because it gets so dang nasty these days. That's all part of the Mincing Rascals podcast, and we'll post that edition of it after the show today around 4:30. I hope you listen to the Mincing Rascals and share it with your friends. It's 2:20. This is WGN. Some of you say that woman, Kristen McQuarrie, who is speaking for the president, is so right. And then some of you say, who is that woman? Get her out of here. But that's what happens. The nice thing about the Mincing Rascals, I think, is that we're all friends. It seldom gets any more animated than that. In fact, that's about as, you know, contentious as we get. But it's some pretty informed people that come at this topic from any of the topics from different positions. John, he sets the tone for negativity. Fake is untrue news. Negative does not mean it is untrue, said another texter. Yeah, I know I got to read these things. I'm happy to. WGN-TV says here, this week on Chicago's Best, some of the best gems are truly hard to find. Tune in for an all-new episode, Chicago's Best Hidden Gems. That's Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Amita Health knows you like no one else. They're the one that's there for you always. Lifelong bonds make all the difference at Amita. They're the one that knows what you need and when you need it. Amita Health, they always put you first, now includes 19 hospitals, 20 immediate care centers, and more than 230 outpatient locations in the Chicagoland area. Visit AmitaHealth.org/access or call 855-MY-AMITA in sickness and in health. I got just a minute here. I think I have enough time to read the Georgina Chapman story in, I think it was published in Vanity Fair. What am I reading from here? This is E! Online, but I think it's them reporting that it was in Vogue. 5 days after the first report was published, remember the New York Times and the New Yorker had exposés and major stories a little over a half a year ago detailing the bad behavior, the criminal behavior maybe, of Harvey Weinstein. Marchesa, M-A-R-C-H-E-S-A, co-founder Georgina Chapman, Weinstein's wife of nearly 10 years, announced that she had left him 5 days after the news broke. Chapman, a judge on Project Runway All-Stars, finalized their divorce months later, receiving a settlement of $15 to $20 million. Now Chapman is ready to share her story. I was so humiliated and so broken that I didn't think it was respectful to go out, she says in the June issue. I thought, who am I to be parading around with all of this going on? It's still so very, very raw. I was just walking up the stairs the other day and I stopped. It was like all of the air had been punched out of my lungs. Chapman says that she decided to see a therapist. At first, I couldn't because I was too shocked and I somehow felt that I didn't deserve it. And then I realized this has happened. I have to own it. I have to move forward. She says there was a part of me that was terribly naive, clearly so naive. I have moments of rage. I have moments of confusion. I have moments of disbelief. Chapman also has moments where she just cries for her two children. She says, what are their lives going to be? She wonders, openly sobbing. What are people going to say about them? It's like they love their dad. They love him. I just can't bear it for them. After the New York Times and New Yorker articles were published, she says, quote, I lost 10 pounds in 5 days. I couldn't keep food down. She says it took her about 2 days to absorb the information about Weinstein. My head was spinning, and it was difficult because the first article was about a time long before I'd ever met him. So there was a minute when I couldn't make an informed decision, and then the stories expanded, and I realized this wasn't an isolated incident, and I knew I needed to step away and take my kids out of there. At home, Chapman says Weinstein seemingly was a good family man. That's what makes this so incredibly painful. I had what I thought was a very happy marriage, she says. I loved my life. The full story is in the latest issue of Vogue. It's 2:28. We'll pause here. Steve, you know you said you like to use the words magma and ooze in the news.
It's always fun.
You don't often get to do that.
Not correctly.
Well, not in their truest sense. By the way, nobody talks baseball better in Chicago than Steve Stone. He's on with Steve Cochran tomorrow, getting ready to talk all things baseball, including the Sox and Cubs. We're going to be at 8:40 tomorrow morning. Stoney with Steve Cochran, that'll be a good conversation. It always is. You know, you were talking about the volcano blowing up, and I was reading about Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm trying to remember what exactly got me onto this. Maybe it was a story about what's going on in Hawaii, but I don't think it was. But they said that when they were unearthing the remains of the victims in Pompeii, that they would find, it was evidently so fierce and so fast that they would find the skeletal remains of a mother shielding a child, right? I mean, it's not like they were scattered or running. Whatever was happening so furiously and so fast. The mother cradles the child, and that's the way they find them, you know.
Thousands. They found the town preserved exactly as it was.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. And so when they were talking about that story today, that this thing could just go pow, and then they said it would send rock and ash, hot ash. Like ash, we think, what's a little ash? It's just powdery stuff. No, it's hot ash.
You're trying to talk yourself out of going to Florida too, Hawaii, aren't you?
And it's raining down. And you're like, well, where am I going to go? Where am I going to go? It's rain. I can't go left. I can't go right. It's raining hot ash, and it's filling up, and I've got rocks falling. I mean, it's the sort of thing you would imagine around dinosaurs, but a scene like that maybe could happen on the Big Island of Hawaii, too.
Well, you know, we just had a group in Iceland last year, and in Iceland, they're very mindful of earthquake or of volcanoes. You know, they had that big eruption, what was less than 10 years ago. Right,
yeah. Well, that interrupted the Earth's climate.
Right, And certainly air travel.
Yeah, and you notice they said, like, the sky was kind of a hazy color. And, yeah, you couldn't fly to some place. And they say, why? It's because the globe has a little envelope of that ash around it, or the fumes, and it's the cloud, and it's affecting the climate or the weather all around the world for a while. So then imagine that when Yellowstone goes kapow, or, you know, something gigantic happens. I mean, this is just a little pimple compared to
how bad it could be. So what's this worry about global warming? We're not going to make it that far. Is that what you're saying?
If it's any consolation. I was so glad that nobody said this yesterday when it was reported that April was the coldest April ever or in a very long time. It was really, yeah. it was a
second,
very,
maybe, I think.
Yeah, or, I mean, there was some historic landmark for how cold April was. And I'm so glad somebody didn't say, well, where's your global warming now, Johnny? Don't say that to me. It'll just ruin my day. So we called Paul Stoddard again. He is a professor of geology at Northern Illinois University. And I was going to ask him to answer some earthquake questions or volcano questions for us. Hey, Paul, this is John. Are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing good. You want to insert anything to that rambling conversation of ours so far?
Sure. Yeah, volcanoes are, you know, they've been around for quite some time, since the beginning of the Earth, in all likelihood. The volcano out in Hawaii is why Hawaii is actually there. The whole island, in fact, all the islands are nothing but the results of outpourings of millions of years of volcanic activity. So, you know, if you like Hawaii, you got to really like the volcanoes as well. They go hand in hand.
Yeah, right. It's part of the picture. But I don't know, I'd imagine whatever made the Hawaiian Islands was gigantic. This does not have the potential to be anything like that, does it?
Well, so the Hawaiian Islands are formed by what we call a hotspot, someplace deep in the mantle of the Earth. You've got a hotter region. Those rocks, because they're hotter, rise up to the top of the mantle and eventually provide the heat and rock material for the magma that generates these volcanoes. And so as the volcanoes erupt, the underwater mountain grows and grows and grows until eventually it pops up above the ocean. Then we have an island. And if we were on a different planet, things would be a lot different. But on Earth, we've got plate tectonics. And so the Pacific plate, which is where Hawaii sits, is constantly moving. And so after a while, it moves that volcanic island away from the hotspot. The hotspot move, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And so eventually it drags all that stuff away far enough that a new hole has to come up through the crust and we generate a new island. So all the Hawaiian islands were at one point, each and every one of them, over the current hotspot.
Oh, I see. So it's sort of like you got this one hot hole, and as the Earth is rolling over it, every now and then it'll well up and make an island, and then it shifts out of the way, and another one comes up, but it's not nine different volcanoes. It's one spot, and the Earth just keeps rolling over it with new material.
Basically right, yeah. And in fact, even on the big island of Hawaii, there are actually five volcanoes, three of which are still considered active or potentially active. But the two on the northwest have already moved far enough away that we don't think they'll ever erupt again. So if you're looking for real estate, that would be the safest place.
Well, is it possible that years and years and years from now there'll be another Hawaiian island? Is this process
Yes, indeed.
Continues?
And in fact, every now and then, offshore of the Big Island, there's a volcanic eruption, and sometimes it actually spews up enough, I think, that we can actually see lava coming up through the water, but then it quickly erodes way back down underneath.
I got an idea as to how we can save people or, you know, I don't know, civilization. Figure out where these hot spots are, where the pressure of the magma is, and then drill some holes all around the perimeter to relieve the pressure, and then the magma will come out those holes, but it won't all come, you know, oozing out or blowing out of one spot. Your thoughts?
No. It's going to come away. And I think the pressure builds very slowly over a long period of time. These holes that you're drilling, they're going to be tiny compared to what is actually feeding Kilauea and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's up there. It's with ideas like pouring super glue down the San Andreas Fault to try to keep that from...
I believe my idea is a little bit better than that one.
No.
So can you put this one in any perspective for us? Like, is this just a run-of-the-mill volcano or volcanic eruption by the standards of our current lifetimes?
Well, you know, anytime you've got this type of activity, I wouldn't say run-of-the-mill. I mean, Kilauea has been erupting on and off for a long time. I've been over there when it was erupting, but instead of big rivers of lava coming down, you'd have little bits of it oozing out here and there. Yeah. And so if you were stupid and wanted to, you could go touch fresh lava. I don't recommend that. But here, you know, so this is a much more active phase of it, but it's not dramatically unusual. I mean, it's, you know, people aren't going to look back 1,000 years and say, oh, yeah, that was horrible when that happened. I mean, you know,
well, is there any chance, Paul? Paul Stoddard's on the phone line, a professor of geology at Northern Illinois University. He is my favorite geologist at Northern Illinois University. is there any chance that this thing will go kapow? Because they were reporting yesterday that maybe some of the debris is going to fall in, somehow it's going to be choked up, and then it's going to go boom. What do you think of that?
Well, there are several types of volcanoes on Earth, but there are two major types. One we call stratovolcanoes, and the other we call shield volcanoes. Hawaii is a shield volcano. It's made up mostly of basaltic lava. And the stratovolcanoes are things like Mount St. Helens or Mount Pinatubo, Mount Fuji, the nice, beautiful cone shape with the snow on top and all that good stuff. Those are made up of something called andesite. And the difference is in the viscosity of the magma. The basalt is a much thinner magma. The andesite is much thicker.
Oh.
And as such, the basalt can let gas pressure, can release gas pressure much more quickly than the andesitic magmas. And so the gas pressure builds up in the andesite, and those things, it's like shaking up a soda can and then popping the lid.
Yeah.
When they go very explosively, like Mount St. Helens.
And Mount St. Helens is really, in any of our lifetimes, the biggest earthquake that we've kind of experience, right? Although,
in this part of the world, Mount Pinatubo, I think, was larger, and that was Mount St. Helens was 1980. Pinatubo was 98, 99, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Over in the Philippines, though. But you know, you were talking about the ash from Iceland going up.
Oh yeah, Iceland. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Pinatubo, actually, that ash spread around the entire southern part of the northern hemisphere, and sunsets were really great once you got down into Mexico. Hawaii's not that. Generally, the shield volcanoes, basaltic volcanoes, are not that explosive. You never know for sure. The Earth always has a trick or two up her sleeve, but I'd be surprised, really surprised, if you got a big kaboom coming out of Hawaii.
Still, it's pretty cool, though, where you're like, it's just so weird to see on a street, you know, and there's a claw.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And here's this 7 foot tall, just slowly coming at you, red hot wall of magma. Just, it's in your home state. Boom, boom. Here it comes.
Yeah, what's when it's in your subdivision? That's when it's really.
Telling you. Yeah, it's bizarre. any chance we'll get anything like that in Chicago?
Alas, no.
Spoken like a geologist. Yeah, imagine if one of these just welled up. I mean, we have sinkholes, but imagine if it was going the other way. Imagine if, you know, one just opened up under the Tribune Tower. That'd be pretty awesome, eh, Professor?
Yeah, well, they don't like Northern all that much. So, yeah, that'd be pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I kid.
You can't say that. So. I know you don't mean that, but I get your point. Hey, listen, we'll continue to follow this, and if I got more brilliant questions like this or observations, I'll give you a call back, okay?
All right, appreciate it.
Paul Stoddard, thank you, sir. He's a professor of geology, Northern Illinois University. John, why would Monica Lewinsky even be considered for the same event as a former president? Well, it's a magazine which she's either written for or has written stories about her, and it's Bill Clinton, and it's on social change, and I don't think either of them are illogical people to invite to some sort of symposium or some sort of event. I just don't know how they both ended up on the same invite list. By the way, speaking of celebrities, we asked producer Elif. Elif, how much is Harvey Weinstein worth? His wife said she got $15 to $20 million out of their divorce. She's come forward today, finally speaking out about what it was like to go through that ordeal. She had divorced him 5 days after, filed for divorce 5 days after the scandal broke in the New Yorker and the New York Times, the Harvey Weinstein story. So his wife's talking about it. And she only get 15 to 20 million, which is a lot. But I thought, how much is Harvey Weinstein worth, Elif?
Harvey Weinstein's net worth has gone between $240 million and $300 million, John.
$240 was. How much is he worth now?
Weinstein's current net worth stands at $50 million, John.
$50. All right. Wow.
That dropped fast.
It's amazing what being a serial philanderer and abuser will do to your net, your bottom line. So, Monica or Bill, who do you invite? This is the story on NBCNews.com. Monica Lewinsky said Wednesday she had been uninvited from an event on social change after the organization hosting it learned that former President Bill Clinton had also accepted the invitation to attend. She tweeted, "Dear world, small d, small w, please don't invite me to an event, especially one about social change, and then after I've accepted, uninvite me because Bill Clinton then decided to attend or was invited." Lewinsky tweeted that on Wednesday. Lewinsky did not name the host of the event. She added in another tweet that she had turned down an offer to write for that magazine, though. And P.S., she writes, "Definitely, please don't try to ameliorate the situation by insulting me with an offer of an article in your magazine." Later in the day, Huffington Post wrote that the host of the event was Town & Country magazine. Huh. And the event was its annual philanthropy party on Wednesday. The magazine apologized for its actions. They say, "We regret the way it was handled." Yeah, howdy. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, rolling into the studio. Hi, campers.
Hi there. We just had the Mother's Day celebration. It's my daughter's school. Very, very sweet. Reminder for everyone to take care of their mom this weekend, right? My little one had to draw a picture. What my mom does best is...
Oh, man, I'm terrified to ask my sons.
You wonder what they come up with.
Yeah, I know.
For me, it was cooked pancakes with syrup and whipped cream.
Oh, nice.
So my cooking skills, top-notch.
Is that a picture, too?
There's a little picture there of me, which was undecipherable to Rokan. But anybody could clearly see that is a mom cooking for pancakes.
Yes. Well, the thing is, she put the two of you in the same clothes. And I was, do you guys share clothes?
No.
Because it's sort of, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't make it out. You know. Well, you two do look alike, so I kind
of
get it.
Yeah, it's sort of the mini-me concept.
Yeah, she's definitely your mini-me. Mm-hmm. No question about that. So yeah, I just think that the spelling there, I would like to give her credit because her spelling, and how old is she?
Seven? Six.
Well, is her last name DeVlantis? Because anybody that has to spell that, no? Okay, I was going to say, because she's already got a leg up. Cook pancake with... S-I-E-R-U-P.
Syrup.
Yeah. That's the way the president spells it. So I'm very proud of her because she's kind of at that level.
She can tweet, I think,
syrup.
If I would let her at this point. She's ready to go.
It's nice to see that they don't have spell check when you're writing with a crayon or a pencil.
Yeah.
You have to know how to spell the words. It doesn't fix it for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Syrup.
There you go.
Many might say indecipherable, but you can clearly tell what that
is. Keep that forever.
I will.
All right. I'm out of the way. You guys have a terrific radio program.
All right.